Hello and welcome to Eisner Amper's podcast series, where we have the chance today to sit and speak with movers and shakers in their industry. I'm Lisa Nee, a tax partner at Eisner Amper, specializing in real estate, and I'm your host today. With us today are Darren Hornig from Hornig Capital and Chris Schlenk from Savannah. Gentlemen, I'm thrilled to have you here. Darren is the managing partner of Hornig Capital Partners and has more than 20 years of diverse real estate experience, including a real estate broker, telecommunications entrepreneur, and a real estate investor and developer. Chris is a founder and managing partner of Savannah, where he sits on the investment committee and is in charge of construction and redevelopment and shares responsibility for asset management, sales, marketing, and acquisitions. Gentlemen, welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, Lisa.
So your firms are involved in a bunch of real estate deals together. What do each of you look for in a potential business partner, and what strengths do you each bring to the table?
Well, I can tell you, as you know, we typically don't do deals with partners. We're in a fund structure, so we, because we're vertically integrated, so we have, you know, sort of all aspects of real estate development under one roof. So when we do deals with partners, we're typically looking for somebody like a Darren who's got an angle, right? Darren's great at finding deals. He's, you know, we found this great deal out in Bushwick for us that we've done together, and also a great deal on the Third Avenue Bridge in Mott Haven section of the Bronx. And when you're looking for a partner, you're looking for someone that's going to bring something to the table that you might not have. And I think Darren brings an incredible sense of energy and very creative thinking about how to find deals. We have a, you know, pretty big back of the house and great deal finders, but I think, you know, what we've seen is that Darren has an incredible ability to ferret out deals that other people can't.
Thank you, Chris. That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. you know, from my perspective, I look at it pretty much the opposite of Chris. I'm an operating partner model. I do not have a fund. I have my own capital that we put into deals. So what we are out there doing is sourcing deals, as Chris had mentioned. And then when we find a deal that we like and we underwrite, and typically we'll lock it up in contract, then we look for outside equity partners. And happily, in two situations, it worked out with Chris and his Savannah team. But what I look for in a partner, first and foremost, is honesty, trust, and integrity. Because frankly, without those three components, it doesn't matter how much money somebody has or how rich my promoter is or how big my fees are. It starts with the trust, starts with the handshake. And then once you go through those elements that you know you can work with somebody, it has a lot to do with the vision and working with this person. When you get into a transaction in contract, it's a lot of work in doing the due diligence and figuring it out. And you need to know you have a common vision to work with somebody to complete the transaction, because these transactions don't happen in a week. They happen to take, you know, 2 years, 3 years, in some cases, you know, four or more. And you're really working with this partner day in, day out. So I'm making sure I like the people and I have that trust level to take it to that next level.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the most important thing is the trust level, because again, you are working with somebody day in and day out on deals. And in real estate, nothing ever happens or goes the way you think it's going to go. There's constantly traps. You're constantly hitting walls on costs, on lease up, on everything. And to the extent that you have somebody as a partner who you can sit with and talk rationally and go over the new business plan and a revised business plan, because also not only do you have a partner, you're going to have maybe another partner in the deal, like we have in the Schlitz Brewery in Bushwick. We have a partner who owns the fee, and we have the leasehold. You have a bank, right? So there's many, many different partners in a deal. And then you and your operating partner or your equity partner have to sit down and agree on what, you know, where are you going if the road has changed, and how do you disseminate that message to the people that are involved also in the deal?
And the road will change, right? It's very rare you set out on a business plan and that business plan is slowly executed, because there's just uncertainty, right? When you get into deep construction of existing buildings, there's things behind the walls or under the roof that you've never seen before or anticipated, so that will change. And obviously, the economic climate will change from time to time, based on where, you know, debt markets are or the leasing velocity. So you need to be adaptive. And, you know, the key point, and I say this all the time, is you have to be reasonable. You know, if you're reasonable, you can make intelligent decisions But if you're an unreasonable person and you're stuck in your ways for arrogance or anything else, I just will pass over that partner for an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it's the deal you said no to or the deal that you passed on for could be any reason, but for the partnership reasons, it's probably one of the best deals you ever did.
Great. So let's go back to the, you had talked about the Mott Haven property that you bought in 2015. You closed on a commercial loft building in the Bronx, which rebranded the property as the Bruckner Building. Can you guys talk about this project, which was just completed, and the transformation that was happening around the development, and what role it's going to play in that neighborhood? And not only that, but where you see the South Bronx in the next 10 years?
Sure. I'll take the first part. As where the South Bronx is going. And I think Borough
President... the second part, actually.
The second part as my first part. the Bronx Borough President, Ruben Diaz, I think has, you know, the best perspective on this. And I was with him twice last week talking about the Bronx at a conference. You know, the Bronx is in the first inning. It's really the borough that has changed the slowest. It's been the borough that for whatever reason hasn't gotten the respect and capital investment and infrastructure. And I think that is significantly changing. When you look at Manhattan, you know, Manhattan is really, really expensive in every facet. Brooklyn has gotten that way, especially along the Brooklyn waterfront into Williamsburg and Bushwick. And if you look at Queens, the Queens waterfront, Long Island City, and then moving further east. The Bronx hasn't quite gotten there yet, but is starting to. When we started looking at properties, and I've been focusing a lot of time and energy on the outer boroughs, one of the initiatives was the Bronx because of the transportation and proximity to Manhattan, and frankly, the pricing. It's easy to buy a property if you want to spend the most amount of money and be the highest bidder. It's another to find properties in emerging markets that you think are on trend or on growth. And when we started looking at the Bronx, and particularly this area in the Mott Haven section, right over the Third Avenue Bridge, it was really an area that had a lot of artists in it. And my father taught me long ago, follow the artist. You know, unfortunately, I missed Soho, I missed Meatpacking, missed Williamsburg, missed Chelsea. Well, I got Chelsea a little bit. But I didn't listen to my father early enough, but I vowed not to make that mistake. And if you look at what we did in Bushwick and now in the Bronx, is really the follow the artist. So when we first found what is now the Bruckner Building at 2417 Third Avenue, it was 170,000 square foot loft building.
I think it was 150,000 back then.
I think it was 145,000. Now it's 172,000. And hopefully it's going to grow again, but we don't know. We just need some rain and sunshine. But we looked at the building. It's an eight-story structure, 22,000 foot floor plates, 10 to 12 foot ceilings, all cement, big lollipop columns, and the bones are there. So when I look at a building, you can't really change the bones. You can't change some characteristics, but you can make them better and prettier. And our vision was lockstep from day one of how do we make this a cool, hip, tech-oriented, TAMI-friendly building. And we went through a $12 million renovation plan that I'll let Chris shed some light on.
I think Mott Haven, Bronx, it's a great location right on the Third Avenue Bridge, you know, chip shot from Manhattan. One of the good things, you know, Savannah, we tend not want to be the pioneers. We'd like to go to areas where there's a little bit of wind to the back, some stuff already going on. You don't want to be too early or too late. Hard to time, but we felt like the investment in the Bruckner in 2015 was the right time. Somerset Partners and the Chitrit Group had announced a year or so before they were building 2,000 units of housing immediately adjacent to us on each side of the Third Avenue Bridge. So we saw obviously a lot of good going there. Keith Rubenstein from Somerset has also, over the past year and a half, been making individual and private investments in buildings in and around that area, putting in great pizza shops and good coffee shops and cool dress and high couture stores, and kind of just individually and personally investing in the area. And that's how you really make an area. You come in with big plans, but you also have to do the things around the edges that support the infrastructure and get people excited and bring new exciting people. You know, I think I would say in retrospect, we probably overspent on the Bruckner building. We did all new windows, which was required. We did a brand new facade. We did, you know, chipped and painted and everything. We did brand new elevators. There's always a push and a pull when you're doing a development like Bruckner or like the Schlitz Brewery in Bushwick, where our tendency, and I think Darren's tendency also, is to overspend a little bit. It's to go in there and really make it nice, and that attracts people. You know, build it and they will come. I think in certain secondary, and I call the Bronx secondary markets, I think that that business philosophy might be a tad bit flawed, just because it's very hard to say who the tenant is going to be. I can tell you that when we did the Twitter buildings on 17th Street between 7th and 8th Avenue, we knew there were 280,000 square feet of vacant of space in the best area in New York City, a block from Google. We knew that our tenant was going to be some sort of a TAMI tenant. Did we know it was going to be Twitter? Absolutely not. But we knew that we had to do a massive, massive core gut renovation because we were going to get a really, really high quality tenant. In the Bronx, you know, we had a lot of artists that were living there, artists that were working there. That business plan is yet to be proven out for us in the Bronx. It's a little bit slower than we thought. So I think the jury's still out, but still very happy that we bought the building. I know we'll make money. It's just going to, I think the business plan on that is changing a little bit as we speak.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think some of the biggest challenges in the, you know, secondary, tertiary, emerging markets is really defining, you know, the who, what, when, and how. When you look at both the Bruckner and the Schlitz, I think we bought the asset right, and I think we bought the asset in the right location. And we both had exactly the same vision of what we thought the tenants would be there. And the tenants are there, frankly, but they're coming slower. If these buildings were in Manhattan, they'd be hitting high point peak pricing. I mean, literally, if Schlitz was in New York City, it'd be getting rents at $150 a foot. That's how great that asset is. And same thing for the Bronx, would be a Midtown South building in the $70s, $80 a foot rent. But when you're looking at these emerging markets, you don't have the same velocity flow. People have a tendency right now, and I think this will change over time, how much time, I don't know, that they want to be in Manhattan first, and then they look at these alternative markets. But as Manhattan has gotten more costly and vacancy rate has gone down, they're starting to look elsewhere. And I'm experiencing this, so right now, I'm developing another building in Ridgewood, the Box Factory.
It's so funny because he didn't invite us to be his partner on that one.
No, I did invite you. You didn't see my vision.
Oh, right.
Is that Ridgewood or Ridgewick? Which?
You know, I tried to get away with Ridgewick to brand my own area, and I got shut down pretty quickly. Nobody knew where they were going in the country. There is a Ridgewick somewhere. It's just not in Queens or Brooklyn. But it is Ridgewood, and you were invited. It was probably on the smaller side. But I did the same thing again. I think I created a product that is going to be by far and away the nicest building there. And we're early on. We haven't started the marketing yet. But it's hard. Right, I've been doing this over 25 years. Chris, the same. He has impeccable vision and styles, you know, down to the lighting and detail, which is great. But both of our visions are costly to execute. And you go into a building, you know, it's hard to say I'm going to do this half-ass and make it okay. I like to do it right. He likes to do it right. Together, we both do it right, and it looks phenomenal. But the tenancy, you know, still wants to pay $20 rents when we're expecting $30 rents because we put on the nicer elevator finishes, redid the lobby, and did everything else. So it's a balance like everything else in life. And it's not easy finding that emerging market balance yet. For me, I think people, and there's a lot of people out there who do absolutely nothing and just get lucky by the tides of real estate and have done well. That's not my instinct or my nature, and I would speak the same for the Savannah team.
To hear more from Darren and Chris, listen to part 2 of this podcast.